the Bruins want a piece of Subban.
Are you kidding?
This is the
famous forum in Montreal. The Canadiens win the Stanley Cup.
Welcome to the 2-4. I'm Zach Vanoss. Along with me, as usual, Sean O'Neill. Good Wednesday afternoon to you, Sean.
Good Wednesday afternoon to you, our last 2-4 podcast before the trade deadline.
Yeah, I wanted to let people know that it was Wednesday because, who do you think isn't going to be on the member of the team by the time people actually hear this?
Yeah, that's a very good question. We were talking before the show that it's always kind of risky doing a podcast this time of year because some of what we say could be out of date by the time it's posted on iTunes, and hopefully that's not the case.
But, even last week's, the Hal Gill conversation, I don't think a lot of people had managed to get to download the podcast by the time that became pretty much no longer a topic of conversation.
Yeah, exactly, but that's just the way it is this time of year. Things can change just like that, but I think by the time we speak next Wednesday, Thursday, whatever it might be, a couple players might be on the move. Apparently Moen isn't, and we'll get to that later, but I wouldn't be surprised if AK is gone. I wouldn't be surprised if Campoli is gone. These are the names we mentioned time and time again here on the 2-4 in sort of anticipation of the deadline, but it's finally we're within striking distance. Finally teams are starting to make some moves, so it's getting interesting.
And on that note, let's get to the opening 20, which I accidentally called on last week's show. I accidentally referred to it as first and 10 at one point.
Oh,
which was the name of our opening
one
segment.
Of our old gigs.
Yeah, it's back in the radio days. But no, this is the opening 20, and question number one alludes exactly to that Hal Gill trade. Do you think Pierre Gautier got fair trade value in return for the big man?
I think he got more than fair trade value. Let's give credit where credit is due for to turn Hal Gill, who's a great defenseman, very experienced, a nice piece in the playoffs, but to turn him into a second round pick and a prospect with some pretty nice upside, that's a really nice return. And it's become clear, I think, over the past couple of days that it's a seller's market, but that was a real coup by Pierre Gautier. So credit him for moving early, for getting the move done, and for getting, I would say, more than equal value in return.
Certainly a seller's market, unless your house in Columbus, not getting a great return on Antoine Vermette, in my opinion.
Yeah, that's true, but otherwise, I mean, some of the returns that people have gotten, what the Lightning managed to get for Scott Downey to me was surprising. And, just going back to what we got for Hal Gill, I think that's a really nice bounty for a guy like Hal Gill at this stage in his career.
No question about it, and you and I have discussed a little bit off-broadcast that there is a chance to some degree that Hal Gill could return to I'm not speculating that he will or won't. I'm saying, all things considered, if Hal Gill really wanted to go on a run with Nashville, he can still bring it back to Montreal next season. He's a free agent come the end of the year. We'll see, I think, what happens in Nashville, and he'll decide what he's going to do, whether hang it up or come back with them or somewhere else going forward. But for Hal Gill, a guy who, we were mostly not happy about when he came into town, I know he won everybody in Montreal over, well, most people who were able to respect what it is that he did, and a fantastic return. I think TSN had them getting like a fifth rounder at one point for him. I think you and I had talked, we said, a second rounder because his value is high, but to combine for everything that kind of came back, a couple of prospects, one who happens to be a legacy in the Canadiens organization and the pick on top of that, I have to applaud Pierre Gautier on that one.
Speaking of which, what are you expecting out of Blake Geoffrion?
Well, I'm assuming...
Or little boom boom, as we've decided
boom,
to call
boom. I can only assume at this point that to some degree he'll put up similar numbers to either his grandfather or his great-grandfather. I think expecting any less would be underselling a tremendous legacy. And so, this is probably a guaranteed Hall of Famer, up to one of the 10 best in NHL history.
That sounds reasonable.
Is that reasonable? Or should I not temper expectations? No, I think, he'll make, like you said at the top, there's good upside there. Montreal seems to be assigning, or rather amassing, a good group of second to third liners for prospects. The first liners are still going to have to come from elsewhere, it would seem. But I like at least, I'd say he's a second liner at the top of his game, and third liner perhaps more expected from him going forward.
Yeah, he's been, I guess you could say, maybe a minor disappointment up to this stage in his development since getting drafted, but he's still really young, and his pedigree, I'm not even talking about his name, but I mean, his resume is pretty good. He was, I think, a 3- or 4-time member of Team USA at the World Juniors. He was the Hobie Baker Award winner when he played in the NCAA. And, you know, his numbers in the limited time he had at Nashville weren't great, but they weren't horrible, especially for what a defensive team that is. So I think TSN, when the trade broke, they had him projected as a, you know, like you said, a third liner, a guy who can step up on the second line, probably not a first line guy, but if he's a third line, you know, 15 to 20 goal scorer type guy with some grit, that's a nice return.
Yeah, no question about that. And I mean, like you said, the pedigree outside of simply the fact that he comes from a long line of some pretty decent hockey players, that they're, you know, talking about him a few seasons ago, you'd be very excited to get him. And so, you know, I think it wouldn't be wrong to perhaps hold expectations a little high at this point. You know, like you said, he's still got room to develop. Speaking of the deadline, and as you alluded to at the top of the podcast, what do you make of rumors that Travis Moen is off the trade block?
Well, I think, first of all, you have to take every rumor at this time of year with a grain of salt. And, you know, not that the people who reported this didn't do their due diligence, but there's just so much misinformation out there. If it's true, though, this makes absolutely no sense to me. You know, Travis Moen's a nice piece this time of year. There are playoff teams who could use him, and if you can get a pick in return, you do that. I don't care if you're halfway through your contract negotiations with him. He's a nice piece, but he's eminently replaceable, so I have absolutely no idea why the Habs would hang on to him.
No, there's no need for him to be completely off the block. Like you said, I mean, my suspicion, I have to deduce that if this is the case with a guy who's going to be a free agent at the end of the year in a season that clearly isn't going anywhere, you'd be an absolute fool to not make a move. This is a guy whose value is probably never going to be higher in a way. And at the same time, you know, there's no certainty that he's going to stick around. You have to be dealing this guy unless he's all but signed. But as you said, even if he is all but signed, at least hear offers. You never know when somebody's in a desperate situation or thinks that Travis Moen might be a part of what they need to get themselves a Stanley Cup. You never know what somebody might be coming back with. I don't see why he should be completely off the block unless, I suppose, his season's completely over. But why would you just not tell the fans that at this point, that, you know, Travis Moen won't be back?
And those were the rumors that surfaced today, but it still wouldn't shock me to see him moved by Monday. Dallas Stars were in town last night. Again, we're recording this on Wednesday. They won 3-0. There's four former Habs on that Stars roster: Mike Ribeiro, Michael Ryder, Sheldon Surrey, and Stefan Robida. Any of them that you would like to see back in a Habs uniform at any point in their career?
Stefan Robida.
Yeah.
Absolutely love to see Stefan Robida. At first I read that list, or before I got to the players on, I was thinking, I forgot about Robida, and I was thinking Ribeiro, Ryder, Surrey, no thanks, Mike Ribeiro, Sheldon Surrey, probably not unless the team was built for a guy like you to have a play on it, but likely not. Michael Ryder, I liked Michael Ryder in Montreal, I really did, and I would have no problem with seeing that new comeback at some point. I'd never disliked him, so I would have taken Ryder, but no, Stefan Robida, I think, is the no-brainer for me. I'd see him back in a Montreal uniform in a second.
Yeah, Robida, a guy who the Canadians gave up on far, far, far too early, gave him away for basically a bag of pucks, and he's turned into a really good second-line defenseman. I think he's got one All-Star game appearance under his belt. And, I mean, if the Habs could get a player like that, that'd be a nice piece, but he's another player who, unfortunately, the Habs let go a little too early for far too little.
No, and that's, we've alluded to, I think Robida is one of these guys that we use as an example all the time of the organization's consistent ability to quit on a player before, you know, they've done any developing at all. And, you know, I think you have to take Robida as that warning of don't let something like this happen again. It's a city that has so much pressure, and even I think you can think about that with a player like Geoffrion. There's no question that there's going to be a ton of pressure on Geoffrion. Obviously not to be his grandfather or his great-grandfather, but nonetheless, people are paying a lot more attention to him than if his name was something else. But don't go quitting on him early either, and obviously that goes for the smart move they made on Carey Price, and hopefully the smart move they'll continue to make on PK. Not that I think PK has shown you anything to give you even reason to give up at this point, but that's another conversation altogether. Sticking with the Stars who were once Habs, would you make of Ribeiro's post-game celebration and how the Habs crowd reacted to it?
It didn't bug me in the slightest. Now, full disclosure, I didn't watch the game live. I only saw it after the fact, and who knows, maybe if I, you know, watched it all as it was going on, I would have had a different reaction, but it didn't bug me. This is a guy who's from Montreal. This is a nice moment for him. You know, I thought it was all in fun. I didn't think he was showboating all that much. And as far as the Habs crowd reaction, you know, I wish they'd been that supportive of Ribeiro when he was in Montreal instead of running him out of town, but hey, the crowd needs something to cheer for at this point of the season, and if it's an opposing player coming in and getting the first star, if that's what it takes to get us on the crowd on their feet, then, you know, so be it.
I wouldn't have been one of those cheering. I don't like him at all. Never been a Ribeiro fan. I didn't like him in Montreal. You know, there's something that always bothered me about Ribeiro. So if I had been in the Bell Center last night, in the spirit of things, I would have been booing, I'm sure, just because, you know, you're at the game, you want to be heard a little bit. But did I think it was anything all that controversial? No, like you said. I mean, the crowd cheered. It was his hometown. I'm sure there's plenty of people out there who would like to see him back, even though I'm not one of them. But, you know, I don't think it was quite as malicious as some people might have wanted to make it out to be. I mean, it's, you know, we know who he is, and there was certainly a little bit of rubbing it in the face as well, but, you know, Every guy who either was meant to be in Montreal, like we've always said for Lemieux and LeCavalier, or guys who actually played in Montreal, when they come back, there's always going to be that little bit of extra drive, and that's what Ribeiro had going last night. And, you know, he was excited. I don't like him, but I was fine with what he did.
Yeah, and like you said, it was his first game back, oddly enough. It seems like that trade was forever ago. It was 5 years ago, now 6 years ago. It was his first game back, and, you know, you could tell from the post-game comments it was a game he was excited for. And I think he was obviously hurt by the move, so it was all in fun. Like you said, it wasn't mean-spirited. He wasn't really rubbing it in excessively, at least. I didn't have a problem with it.
All right, hit me with the next one.
Number six. Who is the biggest piece available at the trade deadline?
Well, I mean, if Rick Nash is available, as seems to be the case, certainly he would be a huge piece on a team. Jeff Carter, I'm not so sure that he'd be a player I'd like to take on, though. You know who's talking about Jeff Carter right now and are considering bringing him into the fold? The Toronto Maple Leafs, and that is a move, ladies and gentlemen, that gets the Zach Vanoss endorsement.
Yeah, it's funny how Carter's stock is just completely nosedive over the last year. This was a player
ago
I loved. Yeah, I loved him in Philly, but for the next 10 years and the way he sulked his way out of Columbus, it's not a contract I'd be willing to take on. And it's interesting, you hear a lot of people saying that obviously Nash is the big piece, but Columbus is trying to sell Carter Hart as a consolation prize for teams that aren't willing to give up all the pieces that it would take to get Rick Nash.
That's true. And the other guy that I kind of see not moving because Vancouver, I don't think has complete faith in Bobby Lou, so I don't see Corey Schneider moving there. But if Vancouver decides, you know what, we've got Luongo, what else are we gonna do? We've got to ride this guy. This has to be our guy. We will move Schneider because we can probably get a very nice piece back. There are certain teams out there who a goalie of that caliber would make a big difference for, and I'm pretty sure the Leafs won't give anything to Vancouver that they'd be wanting in return, but that would actually, in my opinion, be a smart move for them because their goaltending is doing what Leafs goaltending always does.
Yeah, and the other move that's being talked about, and I don't see this happening, but it makes a lot of sense in just pure hockey terms, is Nash going to Vancouver in exchange for Hodgson and Schneider. And, you know, I think that would be a win-win trade for both teams. Yeah. Columbus gets two, you know, a guy who I think might be the Calder Trophy frontrunner as well as a possible franchise goalie while the Canucks get that one guy who might finally put him over the top. I don't think it's going to happen, but if you look at it in terms of pure X's and O's on ice value, that makes so much sense.
Of course it does. That's why it's not going to happen. Deals that make sense absolutely never happen. All right, where it's time to move on, right?
I suppose.
I'm barely paying attention. So of these pieces that we're talking about, they've got to move somewhere. Who's going to be the absolute biggest buyer come deadline day or let's say in the week ahead?
Two teams that I'm looking at are two teams out in the Pacific, one being the Sharks, who just always seem to be active this time of year. They're always looking for that one player. So I think the Sharks make a move, and I think the Kings make a move. This is a team that I thought was a Stanley Cup contender heading into the season. They got off to a slow start, but they've shown flashes of being that team since the coaching change. And by all accounts, they're fishing for a pretty big fish. They want that piece, whether it's Rick Nash or someone else. I think LA goes out and gets themselves a pretty nice player to maybe go for that playoff push, that Stanley Cup push.
Do you expect Penner to be involved in that deal?
I don't see who would be willing to take him on, but maybe if the math somehow works out in that sense, maybe you do that.
I'm going to get mine in, but I don't know who's going to be the biggest buyer per se, and those teams you mentioned aren't exactly the front runners. So I'm interested to see you look historically, the pieces that pay off the most are those people who, as Boston did last season, as generally every Stanley Cup winner you look back, they don't go out and make a big splash. They go and, they're already a team that has their splash figured out. They're just looking for those next few pieces to ensure themselves going forward. And so I think whatever team you can look at Monday and see whatever team looks like it had confidence in itself and was only looking to fill holes with some good moves, I think that's a team to definitely watch going forward, because that always seems to be a difference maker for one team or another. And so these players, they got to go somewhere. Who's going to be the biggest seller?
Well, I think Columbus is obviously in complete sell mode. Vermette getting traded to Phoenix earlier today. Nash
on the market,
at least. Is the
fire sale going to continue in Tampa Bay?
I'm sorry?
Is the fire sale going to continue in Tampa Bay?
Yeah, although, I don't know how many other pieces. I mean, they do have pieces to move, but I think Columbus is the team that the buyers are going to be zeroing in on, like we said, for Matt moving earlier today. I don't think Nash gets moved, but he's on the market at least, as is Carter. They've got some other, nice-ish pieces there that they can maybe move, and obviously they're just in complete rebuild mode, so I think Columbus is going to be the biggest seller.
I don't really know that. There's a ton of teams that there's a lot to pick off of, so I have to agree with you on Columbus. That's a team that's got absolutely nothing to lose. Montreal, I think, there's still some pieces to be had, and maybe even one of those pieces that I was talking about before. Is Andre Kostitsyn a player that's going to put you over the top? No, but in the right role, in an aging, perhaps, Detroit, somewhere like that, that could be one of those pieces. So I see Montreal selling perhaps some key pieces, and I still think Steve Yzerman is going to be doing a little more shopping. He might be stockpiling draft picks in exchange for Vancouver to get that piece that is Schneider, either at the deadline, though I see the case there being more likely. He'll get Schneider at the end of the season, more towards draft day.
Yeah, if you get a goalie in place in Tampa, I still think that's a good team. I think that's a team that's, a goalie away from being right where they were last season.
No question about that. To the point that, 2 weeks ago, I thought they were even in shape to still make themselves a possible semi-contender, at least, if they had been able to get a real goalie at that point in time. I really think that's the only big piece that's missing there. We saw that last year.
Yeah, exactly. Number nine. Does Henrik Lundqvist deserve Hart Trophy consideration?
I'm always one of these people who is on one side of that conversation one day and the next in terms of both in baseball with Cy Young and the MVP and in hockey with the Hart Trophy as well as the Vezina. I think you have to kind of look at the pure value. You could have an outstanding year, but if you're on an amazing team, I don't think that gets you as much points, which is why I thought Luongo maybe didn't deserve a Vezina nomination last year and Carey Price did. And the same reason I was arguing that perhaps Carey Price should at least be in the Hart Trophy conversation last year. Not in the top three, but, top five or so, because how much does the team change with or without him? And Without Lundqvist right now, you're looking at a New York Rangers team that might not even be in a playoff position, to be honest with you, if not in that 7-8 spot in that fight. So yeah, I think Lundqvist is what I'm calling him now. Lundqvist definitely deserves at least consideration for the Hart.
That eliminate a goalie from consideration have to be really exceptional. Like Oshik was in the late 90s, or like Tim Thomas the past couple seasons. And, to be honest, I know this is kind of hearsay, but Jose Theodore didn't deserve the Hart Trophy in 2002.
No,
I'm still not entirely sure
agree.
How he won that. I think a goalie has to be having his out of his mind season. That being said, Lundqvist is having one of those years. I mean, he is just on fire. I can't remember the last soft goal the guy gave up.
No.
Like you said, the Rangers are probably sitting in that 7-8-9-10 spot if they have a league average goalie. So I don't know. I haven't gone and made my list. I don't know if he'd be in my top three, but he'd certainly be in the top five.
I think at this point I'd put him in the top three, to be honest.
I think I would too. I think Malkin's is obviously the front runner, and then there's a handful of other players you'd put in the mix as well. Datsyuk, I think, is in the running too.
Once again, Datsyuk's in the running. I mean, he enters the conversation every single season, doesn't he? At some point, he gets himself into the talk, and then generally somebody kind of steps up and puts a team on their back enough to get another consideration. But Datsyuk, every single season, he's absolutely on that list. All right.
And he's such a stellar all-around player, and he never quite has the stats that'll blow you away like the other finalists do, which is why, like you said, he probably sort of fades from the front of the pack more often than not. But maybe this is the year, because he's just been incredible this year. He might be the best all-around player in the world.
He's been incredible, and people have really taken note of the Detroit Red Wings this year as well, and just, everyone seems to be finally standing up this season and applauding the amazing team that they've put together there in Detroit for going on nearly two decades. I mean, they're not just in the top of the pack every year. They're generally a contender every single year for, the past 16 seasons? And I think, perhaps not enough Red Wings people may see have been rewarded for that collectively over time, and I think they're going to want to kind of choose a standout player. So I think Datsyuk, this might be the year. We're out of time, but we still have one more question. I guess we're a little talky today.
A little bit.
How come there aren't any NHL success stories like Lynn, then?
And if people think that we created this question just so we could generate traffic by throwing Jeremy Lynn's name into the podcast description, they're 100% right. But
here's my question. How come Lynn doesn't date Kim Kardashian, who was in a porno? I'm just trying to generate some words that people will search and come to the Montreal Bias.
I see what you're doing
there. You see what I'm being? I'm creating synergy.
It is interesting, though, in the NHL that you don't tend to find these sort of out-of-nowhere stories. Lynn's obviously the one right now, but, we had Tim Tebow earlier.
He didn't really come from nowhere.
No, that's true, but just in the sense of this
I agree.
Weird, bizarre, magical fairy tale season. Kurt Warner going from stocking grocery store shelves to winning Super Bowl MVP. It's been a while since we've had a player like that in the NHL, and I don't know if that's just because, player development and the way the game is played, it's just harder for a player to rise from obscurity. I mean, the best example is actually Ken Dryden, coming straight out of law school and winning a Stanley Cup that same spring, coming straight out of university and winning a Stanley Cup that spring. But the last little while, I struggle to think of a player in the NHL you can compare to Lynn or Tebow or Kurt Warner or Tom Brady.
Would Marty St. Louis not qualify a little bit?
Yeah, fair enough. And actually, now that you mentioned that, I mean, I guess Tim Thomas is to a certain extent in that range.
Yeah,
as well.
I think although Tim Thomas, I mean, he came over here and was around the NHL a little bit before he put up last season. I think to compare somewhat to those other guys that we were talking about, Dryden's case, Thomas would have had to have been, last season would have almost had to have been his first season with the team.
Yeah, I think you're right, though. I think Marty St. Louis is probably the best comparison. A short, sort of unheard of undrafted guy goes on to be a Hall of Famer.
Other than that, to answer the question, though, I don't really know at all. why hockey wouldn't. I think it must be just a matter of luck. I was trying to think of someone in baseball. I can't really come up with one in baseball either. And, you know, prior to, I think football has the most of those for some reason. Prior to Lynn, I mean, there haven't been a ton of guys who have taken over the NBA. I think, you know,
no.
Tebow and Lynn happen to have happened close together. So I think people are seeing that as some sort of connected phenomenon, but really in sports, guys like that, that's once in a generation where somebody manages to go completely unnoticed for so long and then get to the bigs and just set it on fire like that. Or in Tebow's case, you know, against all odds, there's no way a quarterback with his lack of ability to play quarterback should have had any success at all. So, all right, that'll wrap up our opening 20, not first and 10. Here's something I wanted to get into. That I was listening to TSN 990 today in the Melnick show, and he talked about something that I was kind of thinking about the last few days about this team. There's absolutely no identity. And I was thinking about that when they were playing against Carolina last week. Kirk Muller, I know the results in terms of the standings haven't exactly come from Carolina, but that was a very, very different team than we saw earlier in the season when Montreal had absolutely no problem with the Canes. Kirk Muller has given that team an identity. You saw that from start to finish. They absolutely did not quit. And Carolina is one of those teams that is going to finish the season and say, heck yeah, we can build on this. We now know how to win. We now know what we want to do. Kirk Muller is definitely going to be the guy going into next season in Carolina. They form some sort of identity. Montreal is going to be selling off its players between now and Monday at the trade deadline, at least a couple of them. At that point, we'll know at least the team that we're finishing the season with. So is there any chance they get an identity, or is this too much of a destroyed season? The only identity they have at this point is as a losing club, and until next season, nothing's going to start to gel.
I have a hard time seeing anything gelling this season, but I think it's also a team in transition, and we do have to remember that. And I know Carolina is as well, but this is a team that's, you know, the coach has already been fired, the GM's on the way out, they're in sell mode come deadline, and, you know, I think it'd be nice maybe to start fashioning something right now, but I think the goal is, you know, you get to the end of the season, you bring in a new GM, unfortunately you bring in a new coach as well, and that's when the real forging starts. And obviously you build that identity from Carey Price on outwards. But I think, you know, you have to recognize that the team's in a bit of a transition period, and it's hard to establish any sort of concrete identity when there's so many question marks floating around.
That's what I don't think it's possible for this team to get an identity. Like you said, at this point, everybody's just waiting. I think that's been obvious in the effort we've seen the last couple of nights, and I'm not even completely against the guys for what's happened over the last few games. It's been since Boston that I think they kind of felt like, you know, that was their last gasp at a season, and they played well on top of that against a fantastic team and a team they have a real rivalry with. And I think when they lost to Boston, the air absolutely came out of the tires at that point. That was going to be their push and their momentum builder. When it didn't happen, mentally, it seems like they're just not there. The team is sick as well. I mean, it's mid-February, and you're not looking like you're going to make the playoffs. Everybody's feeling under the weather. It's been a long, awful, awful season. And I understand why perhaps they've quit a little bit. They know the coach isn't coming back. Everybody knows that at this point. I think that's a done deal. It's highly likely, and I'm hearing more and more whispers that the Canadians are already in process of shopping for that next GM, which is good. Start that process now if Gauthier is going to be gone, which I think everybody kind of hopes is the case. So I just don't see them managing to dig any identity. I don't see them really getting purpose. There could be a couple guys who step up and identify themselves as real leaders going forward, but you know, like you say, there's no reason for anything to gel. They've got no confidence in the future of the season, and after that they have no idea. So I don't see how you're supposed to build on something. That's unfortunate. I mean, it's always good, and I think we saw the Leafs ride that through the first part of the season, is they've kind of figured out how they could win with who they had it and what kind of game they needed to play to do that, and you saw them build, and that's the only thing keeping them in a playoff spot at this point, is the fact that they carried that momentum through the first half of this season that they'd managed to build by being one of the better records in the second half of the season. So unless the only identity I see Montreal getting at this point is that in a few games' time, when it's really over and everybody's feeling a little healthier and they just start going out there to play hockey, maybe at that point you see a team that maybe has a little bit of fun, since it doesn't matter at that point. Other than that, though, they're not going to figure out who they are until early next season, I think, is the best we can hope for at this point.
Yeah, well, this team, you know, did have an identity under Jacques Martin, and it didn't work very well this season, but it did work to a certain extent in the past. And, you know, this is a small defense-oriented system team, and they're slowly shifting away from that identity. And, you know, what we've been saying for years is that this team needs to get bigger. Well, you know, they've got Cole, they've got Patches, they brought in Bork, Jeffrey has got some size. It's a team that's slowly getting away from their old identity, and they're in the process, I think, of building a new one, but it's just too hard to do mid-season. But as we said, I think, you know, they're in transition. They're slowly getting away from the Martin style system into something hopefully a little more aggressive, a little more you know, aggressive in both senses of the word, more physical, but also just not so laid back, not so cautious, not so conservative. So I think they are trending in that direction, but it's going to be a, you know, at the very least a 6-month process. It's not something that's going to magically appear over the last 20 games of the season.
I don't know if this goes with identity, but in terms of how other teams see you, I was watching the game against Dallas, and it occurred to me, is there any team that gets all too terrified when the Habs send out a power play line that is Andre Kostitsyn, Scott Gomez, Rene Bork, and then Campoli and Caberlé? I mean, they might even be somewhat effective, though clearly not last night. But I just don't see that being a line that terrifies you at all. And the last few games when they've been out there, I've found that teams seem to get a little bit of confidence and have even got a couple shorthanded scoring opportunities, because that is as a weak, weak power play, in my opinion.
Yeah, well, that was the other aspect of the Habs' identity the past couple seasons, was just excellence, just utter excellence on special teams.
That was Kirk Muller. That was all Kirk Muller.
Yeah, I think it was. And, you know, we don't have that big shot from the point anymore. We don't have Hal Gill on the PK anymore. And, you know, this is a team whose our abilities in special teams papered over, you know, how weak we really are 5-on-5. And if they don't have that trump card, if they're not one of the top 10 teams in the power play next season, they're not making the playoffs next year either.
No, and I mean, the only thing that irritates me about that conversation, the power play conversation, why it needs to be better, clearly, yes, had it been better, had it been half as good as it has been the last few years, then this is a playoff team, no question about it. But at the same time, if you really want to compete for a Stanley Cup, you got to forget about how good the power play is. Be good 5-on-5. Make the scoring happen there. Teams that score 5-on-5 generally don't have a ton of trouble scoring when they've got the man advantage. I don't think in this NHL you can rely on the power play anymore, and I think the last few Stanley Cup winners and even the teams that have managed to make it to the Cup prove that. Yes, Vancouver certainly had an effective power play, but they were just as good 5-on-5, if not better. So I don't care if we rebuild the power play. I think I'd like to see some 5-on-5 scoring. I think too long Montreal's been a little bit concerned about not the power play per se, but getting those specialists who do those certain things. And I think you just have to worry about more playing hockey 5-on-5. Forget cheating our way with the little tricks of the game, but be a better hockey team overall.
Yeah, that's a very good point. And I think there's been a feeling around the league the past couple of seasons that to a certain extent Montreal's been getting it done with smoke and mirrors, because they're not a very good 5-on-5 hockey team. Yeah. And like you said, if you're a good 5-on-4 hockey team, that's great. It's a big part of the game, but it only carries you so far. And if you can't match up with those other elite teams, you know, for the 45 minutes of game that you're playing 5-on-5, then you don't have much of a prayer.
No, because power plays come and go. They really do. And penalty killing ability, I think we're going to see Montreal obviously take a step back in that department without Hal Gill. So these things, you know, they come naturally with good players the majority of the time. Clearly, there's guys who are specialists, like Caberlé to some extent, like Hal Gill on the penalty kill as well. But I just don't see how fixing the power play really helps in the grand scheme of what I think you've kind of got, in a way, an opportunity to build something right now, where you're not just looking for a patchwork. This is a team that's not going to make the playoffs. This is a team that's getting everything probably brand new to a certain extent in the offseason, including the likely shedding of the Gomez contract. You can change things, and I don't want to see the team go back to finding, well, this guy was really good on the power play. We'll bring him in, and we'll just get by with it with a really strong power play. You can do that. I don't see that as feasible if you want to actually build something. Feasible, sure, to do what we've been doing for the past, you know, 5, 6, 7 years, but not feasible if you want to really build, which is, I think, what every Habs fan is hoping happens at this point.
Yeah, and I think the Canadians got maybe a little bit too overconfident in their system, in the sense that it didn't really seem to matter who was back there. It was, you know, whether it was Surrey leaves, you put Strait in, Strait leaves, you put Bergeron in. It didn't really seem to matter. But they, you know, they didn't find someone to fill that role this year. And I'm like you. I think the team's problems go a lot deeper than just finding someone with a cannon shot from the point. But if they can bring that player back, you know, the rest of the pieces are in play to maybe have a decent power play again next season. But like you, you know, I don't think, you know, I don't think that's a cure-all, obviously.
Yeah, I guess that's what my fear is that people will say, well, you know, if the power play just would have been good, we'll be fine. So my fear, I think, is that they go out and get that piece to put in place, thinking that'll change things, and I'd rather have a sea change overall, not just kind of plugging that hole that clearly, you know, if one piece falls out of, you're also screwed as much as it helps you. So are we going to take a little break now from chatting with you? You bore me at this point.
No, that's most people's natural reaction after half an hour or so.
This is what the ratings tell us. we've had a lot of market study come back and it indicated that.
Crazy, I'm crazy for feeling so lonely.
Let's get into the next few games coming our way, kind of take us out of the end of February, and we'll be into the end of the season stretch at that point. Friday night is a no game Thursday, which is likely when you're listening to this. Friday night game against the Caps coming up, and then it's Florida on Sunday, and then on Tuesday, Tampa Bay. Let's start off with the Caps game. I mean, we've talked about there's not a ton to look forward to overall. So what are you watching for in that one? I think I'm cheering for the Caps. Or I'm not actively cheering for the Capitals. But let's say it won't break my heart if the Habs lose that one, because the Caps are the ones chasing the Leafs for that eighth spot.
Yeah, they are. And I've been pretty steadfast lately thinking that Washington was going to squeak their way in, but they have not looked good lately.
That's the drum.
Man, they looked bad against Carolina.
Oh, God.
I couldn't believe how bad they looked. And, you know, just quick aside, we were talking to a buddy about this today, but Alex Ovechkin, $9.5 million per season, that could end up being one of the worst contracts in the league in the next year or two.
Which is shocking.
And that sounds insane to
say. I know.
But it's, I wouldn't bet against it, honestly, if you're paying $10 million a season for a 25 goal scorer.
No, and, you know, at the time that they signed it, I think I definitely said there's certain players, or most players, I would never give a deal like that. But I saw nothing wrong with handing Alex Ovechkin that deal. I thought this guy, you know, he was just going to keep doing it. And I don't know. I have no confidence right now that he can get it back. I'm with you. He could get very, very saddled with that thing.
Which is just mind-blowing to me. But
it's shocking.
It's, you know, what Olaf Kolzig said last week just seems 100% accurate, which is that, you know, it just seems like Ovechkin's just bought into the persona and the myth of Alex Ovechkin just a little bit too much, and he just doesn't, I don't know if he doesn't have the fire, if he's lost a step, but players can go through 20-game slumps. They don't go through 2-year slumps.
No, not players of his caliber. It's not supposed to happen to players with as much talent as Ovechkin. And, I mean, Ovechkin, 2 seasons ago... if you played this conversation to me, I simply wouldn't believe that we could get there with Alex Ovechkin, where we think it, not only is it going to be not a great contract, but perhaps one of the heaviest contracts to carry in the NHL. You think back not that long ago, this guy seemed like he legitimately could be challenging Crosby for the best player of his generation. it has to be that he bought into it, right?
That's the only thing I can think of, and it really seems like the Olympics were the turning point. I don't know if, you know, Sochi 2014 back in his home country, if that'll be enough to motivate him to turn things back around, but it's really been a bizarre downfall for, like you said, a guy who was obviously the face of the league.
And that's not to say I don't think Alex Ovechkin's trying, because he just doesn't seem like a guy who's going to coast, but mentally somewhere, it's got to be the drive that he the whole time believed that, you know, no matter what he did, he was going to be this great. But I don't see, when you find yourself slipping, how the egos can't be shed quick enough to go, wait a second, I used to do this much and these results would come, and now I don't do that much and these results are the case. I mean, you got to be able to draw the line between A and B. I'm always shocked by players who don't seem to figure that out.
Yeah, it's been really bizarre. So that's what we got Friday night, and then...
Once again, no Saturday game.
Yeah, for the second Saturday
straight
in a row.
I don't get that.
And then, like you said, the Southern Road Swing continues at Florida at TB.
Guess I'll be cheering for the Panthers to do something. And Lightning, at this point, meh. I'll tune into that game, I guess.
Yeah, I suppose I will as well, but not really a whole lot to look forward to in that one, especially with Vinny on the shelf.
I can't be cheering against teams that are chasing Toronto every night, can I? Against us?
Well, no.
I know, but... And if I was back home... That wouldn't be the case. But now I live in Toronto, and I really, like, really, really, really don't want them to make the playoffs. I don't need to live with that around me. And I think it's even causing...
I think you might be in luck.
But nobody else is winning. Look at the case a week ago, 2 weeks ago, when you and I correctly said this team, the Canadiens, has no chance of making the playoffs. But had they managed to put together... a couple more wins, had they managed to beat Boston, had that triggered them enough to go out and take down Carolina, which, you know, was probably a shootout goal away from happening, suddenly they actually would have been right back in there, because none of these teams from 8th through 10th seem to want to take over a spot that's just been hanging there. The points haven't moved in about a week's time.
Yeah, as much as the playoff chatter has irritated me, you're completely right. No one seems to want that spot, and
like, you any know, team I've, that had been, even a decent week would be in there right now.
Yeah, no, that's exactly it. And I've been, you know, reluctantly admitting that all season long I've looked at the Leafs and I said, yeah, you know what, they've been rebuilding for long enough. They do look like a playoff team, but they're playing some really bad hockey right now.
And the net mining is atrocious.
Oh, it's been brutal. And I, like you said, no one else really seems to want it. No one else seems poised to make that move, but...
How do you see it finishing at this point?
I guess they probably still hang on, but it wouldn't. I mean, I have a hard time looking at them right now and saying that's a playoff hockey team. But the East is weak this year. The bottom half of the East is not impressive.
No kidding. All right, and that takes us through Tampa Bay. What are you thinking on that one?
Well, like you, I mean, I guess Tampa's still also on the fringes of playoff contention, but they're obviously in sell mode as well. Not a whole lot to look forward to when the 13th and 14th place teams in the East go up head to head.
No, exactly. It's not. I mean, somehow the Carolina game ended up being interesting, which was fun at least. And that was a game like we were talking about last week that they actually managed to pull us back in for a second there. But, you know, the schedule is going to be what the schedule is going to be. I have a feeling I'm going to be watching a lot more PVR games going forward. I think and I know a lot of other Montreal fans are going to start doing that. And I think that's a good thing in a way, because if TV ratings fall, and, you know, despite the fact that the Bell Center will be sold out from now to the end of the season, being sold out and having people in every seat is very different, and I think you're going to see a lot of empty seats here till the end of the season as well. So, you know, that's not a bad message to send to ownership, that you can't just do whatever and people come back every day, because that's been... I don't think it is at this point in time, but that's been a big problem in Toronto the whole time, is that really there was no pressure to put a winning product on the ice. And there does seem to be in Montreal. People do go away if the Canadiens are bad.
Yeah, which, you know, you could call that bandwagonism if you want. Maybe it is to a certain extent. But
it is to a certain extent. But I think, you know, if you're just so committed and you've got a fan base that's so committed in the way Toronto is, there's never going to be any pressure to put a winner out there.
Yeah, and I think, you know, the pressure got to Pierre Gauthier.
Yeah.
So it's not always a great thing, but I think that pressure is obviously there, and it'll be there in the offseason on management to obviously make the necessary changes and do something to the roster, whether that's a big trade or, you know, there's not a whole lot in the free agency pool.
No, there's not.
We'll see what they do. Obviously, we'll get to that discussion when it's time. But like you said, there is the pressure there from the public that at the very least management can't get too complacent. They may not always make the right moves.
No.
And, you know, in fact, I've argued that they often respond very poorly to that pressure, but at least there's not the inclination like there has been in Toronto and in other markets to just sort of sit back and be sort of apathetic to the product that you actually put on the ice itself.
And even to get back to the bandwagoning thing for a second, like, fans in New York Yankees fans, if you don't win, they're not going to come either. And I don't think anyone would accuse the Yankees fans of being bandwagon so much as, I mean, there's plenty of bandwagon Yankee fans, but actual fans of Yankees, I don't see them as so much bandwagon as simply a team that or a fan base, rather, that demands excellence from their team. And when it doesn't happen, they're not going to support it. All right. I know we always hand out our three stars and then douche, but I feel like in a season full of negatives, we don't need to always be ending the podcast on a negative. We'll get to the high before we go. So first off, Sean.
Yes.
You think you could drop a douche?
I think I've got one in me. And my douche of the week, mostly because I haven't shit on him in a while, is Scott Gomez.
Scott Gomez is back!
Why, you might ask? Because he's actually been decent lately. By his standards.
Yeah.
But as we've been watching the Rick Nash trade talks unfurl, one of the potential landing spots has been New York, and one of the, if not sticking points, at least one of the pieces that has been mentioned as possibly going in the other direction has been Ryan McDonagh, which, you know, has just underscored what a horrendous trade that's been. So, you know, the Rangers managed to turn Scott Gomez into a top three defenseman who is now, you know, potentially a key piece in a deal for Rick Nash.
And managed to shed that space to have the room for Rick Nash.
Exactly. And that, boys and girls, is why the Rangers are in first and why we are in 14th.
It's that one deal, isn't it?
Well, no, it's not.
Not
that
first,
one,
but come on. That the Scott Gomez deal was absolutely awful and in the exact opposite of what a wine does. This deal just seems to get worse and worse with age. I mean, it's unbelievable how every time another season goes by, Scott Gomez gets worse, and the results, the bearing fruit of that trade seem to increase in their value as well. I've never had a trade that I didn't dislike as strongly at the time because, you know, I didn't love it, but I also didn't hate it as much as I clearly would come to, and day in, day out since then, I think I've hated that deal a little bit worse every day, to the point that right now is the point, because of the way you phrase that douche, that I hate the trade the most of all.
Yeah, I mean, if we had given up nothing for Scott Gomez, a bag of pucks, it still would have been
It still would have been deal, bad, yep.
The fact that you gave up a defenseman who looks like he's probably going to maybe play in a couple All-Star games, maybe, that just, you know, makes it almost unbearable.
How much do you celebrate if Gomez, if Gauthier manages to move Gomez on deadline day?
I would.
I mean, I don't know why it would happen, but
I don't know why it would happen either. But I would almost consider that reason enough to bring him back.
I wouldn't disagree with you when that happens, okay? The odds of it happening are so terrible that, yes, I agree. If he can move Scott Gomez, and if that comes on the heels of the Hal Gill trade, which I think we both have to admit we applauded, then, yes, maybe Pierre Gauthier does still have a spot as the GM if he can manage to move Scott Gomez.
Either way, though, I mean, this stubborn refusal by Habs management to just cut their losses has to come to an end, whoever the general manager is. I think so too, but I would have thought that last year at this point.
Yeah, but when you look at the how these things work and the amount of money one way or the other and the amount of time he'd already been and then the injury, it probably just didn't make sense to bother with it midway through the season. everything changes in terms of his contract structuring after this season, I think that's just what they're waiting for at this point. It better be all that they're waiting for, though.
Yeah, I think we've reached the point of no return as well, and we'll see how the new CBA shakes out, if there's an amnesty clause or not. But I'm with you one way or the other. I think he's gone, but he, you know, he's like Freddy Krueger. Like, every time you think the guy's dead, he shows up for another scoreless season.
It's the Freddy Krueger, more so than the douche of the week. All right, hit me.
Zachary Sivanos?
Yes.
Drop a douche.
All right, I won't delve on this one too long, mostly because I ate up plenty of time and got a little angrier at Benoit Pouliot than I had any intention on getting last week when I dropped his douche. Though I still don't like you, Benoit, all right? You're gutless. But before I get fired up about Pouliot again, I talked about it already in the show. I never liked Ribeiro. I didn't like him as a Hab. I didn't like him once he left. I don't like his face. And as I said in the show, I was fine with what he did last night. But because it was him, had I been in the stands, I would have certainly been booing and faux outraged for the fun of it. And just because I saw some pictures of him out partying prior to the game against Montreal, back in his this ratty looking face in Montreal clubs, reminded me of why I hated him when he was with the Habs and never liked him afterwards. So for that, he's my douche.
Yeah, I never liked the guy, but he's also a 25 goal scorer that we could use right now. So.
He would have never pulled that off in Montreal.
That I agree with.
He would have never been that player in Montreal.
Although he did have a 22 goal season, I think, one year, and we still only got a number 8 defenseman in return.
Okay, everyone knows that was a terrible deal. I won't even get into why that. It was absolutely awful, but I never liked the guy. I think we could have definitely got more for him, but I didn't like him. He's my douche. It's that simple. All right, you ready to hand out our glowing accolades?
Yeah, like you said, nice to end it on a positive note for a change. So
I'm going
to
end it on a positive jam.
Hey, thank you.
Thank you.
My third star of the week, and I think we applauded him last week, but I'm going to do it formally in the form of the third star. Very formal.
So
very formal process.
I'm wearing a tux. I just went and got my tux.
Third star of the week for me is Matthew Darche, who really struggled through the first, through the first half of the season at the very least, largely because Jacques Martin seemed to have a really bizarre obsession with him. But now that he's gone into a role that he's more suited for and more comfortable with, he's been good lately. He's still Matthew Darche. He's still a fourth line guy, but he's finally found his niche, the same player we saw, last season and for a chunk of the season before. So for that, Matthew Darche gets the third star of the week.
A really bizarre obsession with him.
Do you disagree?
No, it's just a lot of other things popped into my head. What kind of bizarre obsession he could have with him. All right, my number three is I can't believe it. This guy's gotten more stars. He's been in my stars twice this season, and I've only called him a douche once, although I think he would have got a lot more had we started the douche earlier in the season. But for the Hal Gill trade, Pierre Gauthier is my third star. That was fantastic work. I applaud it, and I don't remember the last time I was that psyched about a deal that Montreal made that wasn't really bringing back any guys who were actually going to be in the lineup. Well done, Pierre Gauthier. Fantastic move. Did not think you had it in you.
Well, we're not so different, you and I, because my second star of the week is also Pierre Gauthier.
Well done.
And also for the reason.
But he's my third star.
Oh.
I don't hold him as high in regard as you. But I also, I don't treat it as such a formal occasion, so proceed.
I don't really have much to say beyond what you said, but for all the crap we piled on, and that was a nice move.
It really was.
Turning Hal Gill into a draft pick plus a prospect is a coup by any standard.
Two prospects,
although I think I don't pretend to be an expert on prospects by any stretch of the imagination. From what I've gathered, I think Jeffrey was, a legitimate NHL caliber prospect, whereas the other guy's more of a fringe type player. But like you said, two prospects and a pick for Hal Gill is a nice move by Pierre Gauthier.
Nope. Very, very good move. I'll get into my second star now, who is habitually your star somewhere in the ranking. And I thought we were going to try and avoid it, but I can't avoid it. I love Eric Cole. He's my second star of the week. I mean, he was clearly hurt the other day and just kept coming back. He was sick the other night, and he played anyways. Erik Cole was described by Randy Cunningworth as an absolute horse. I don't exactly know what that means, but I like what it could suggest about Erik Cole as a player. You know that this is a guy who plays every single shift. I mean, look at where the season is right now. He's a veteran guy. He's got a fantastic contract. He could easily not play. Plekanec isn't playing because he's sick. He could easily take that night off. I'm sure he's still nursing whatever leg injury he had from the other night. But no, Erik Cole's out there being one of the better players, if not the best player on the ice. Pretty much game in, game out at this point. I can't help it. I always have to give Cole, as do you. We got to put him in there. He's been great.
Yeah, he really has. For me, Cole's almost taken on the mantle of what Camilleri was for this team.
Yeah.
Different type players, but it's just nice to see someone who relishes the pressure of playing in Montreal. And the really funny thing about that is that was the big question mark about Cole. You know, allegedly, at least when they signed the deals, he's played his whole career in Carolina, can he deal with the Montreal media? You know, he didn't fare.
Yeah, what happened to that conversation?
In Edmonton, and that conversation's died out. I mean, he's been nothing if not clutch and nothing if not, you know, just completely embracing the experience of playing in Montreal.
Love my Erik Cole. All right.
As do I.
Hit us with your big star.
The big star of the week, even if his last couple performances haven't been stellar. Carey Price, just because I haven't quite given him as many fist bumps as I would have liked to this season. That's what I call first stars, by the way, fist bumps.
Now, how formal is the fist bump, though? I'm just trying to wrap my head around your star experience.
Well, we're wearing cufflinks when we fist bump, so it's pretty formal.
Okay, good to know.
But Carey Price, yeah, I guess two losses in a row, but he's been better since, you know, I guess Christmas or whatever, than after a average by his standards first half of the season. He's really been coming on, and if there were any questions, and I didn't really hear these, you know, murmurs, but it was only
shocking.
A matter of time. Yeah. If there was any questions, you know, has Carey lost it? Was last year a fluke? Did we make the wrong decision? I think, you know, he's bounced back enough in the second half of the season to put those discussions, if they were even being had, he's put those to bed.
All right. And my first star of the week. You ready for this one?
I think so.
This feels like a play out of your playbook.
Oh.
The Montreal Canadiens organization for not management. Everyone pipe down. Not management. The organization for as much as Montreal fans have been called classless this season, some of it maybe mildly deserved, most of it undeserved. You could never say that about the organization as a whole, and the tribute they paid to Gary Carter the other night, the way only the Canadians can do it. I thought that was absolutely fantastic, very moving. They managed to put Youppi, the big old mascot, back in the Expos gear and not have it feel gimmicky or anything. Having Youppi out there with his head down in tribute like that and putting the light on him, it felt, and not to take anything away from Gary Carter, but this has kind of felt like Montreal Expos fans' last real chance to mourn the loss of the team as well, and I've definitely noticed that over the course of the time since Carter passed away. There's been this complete re-look back at what baseball meant in Montreal, and as much as that tribute was to Gary Carter the other night, it was also to the Expos and Carter being, you know, such a huge part of that team when it was arguably as big as the Canadians in Montreal, and the organization did a fantastic job of paying tribute to that, and so that's why it gets my first star, because you know Montreal's going to do it right. They just always manage to at least do that part right.
Yeah, they do. That's a really good first star. I couldn't agree with you more. It was very well done. They managed to make the Eagles not want me to shove a bottle through my heart, and meaning that I was able to listen to the Eagles song that played over the tribute.
I understood, my friend. I was nodding here enthusiastically.
But no, they did a fantastic job, and like you said, it's been nice to see that side of Montreal come out one last time and to remind people that, you know what, this was a really good, it's a good sports town, and it actually was a really good baseball town, as hard as that is to fathom at one point in time.
I even remember it being a decent baseball town.
Yeah, and
in my younger days, my very younger days.
Yeah, and like you said, I think, you know, Carter was really the face of the franchise. And there was one great picture that they had on the slideshow during the you know, the presentation, which was Gary Carter and Maurice Richard together at the Olympic Stadium, which was just an incredible, incredible photo to have two of those two icons from two different sports together. It was just, that was incredible. That was one of the highlights.
I think it'd be fair to equivocate Carter to Richard in terms of obviously not in terms of championships or but what, how much they were the key player in the historical identification of a team. I think Carter was number one for Expos fans in the same way Richard, as good as Béliveau and Lafleur were, Richard still seems to be the symbol of the Montreal Canadiens, and I think Gary Carter was largely that for the Expos.
Yeah, and how sweet were those number eight sweaters?
Fantastic.
Yeah, like you said, Montreal, you know, they've got plenty of practice in putting on these occasions.
We did one a night for two straight seasons.
What's that?
I say we did one a night for two straight seasons. We got very
that
good.
We did, and no one, like you said, no one does it better than Habs when it comes to that type of thing.
And on that note, look at that. We're leaving on a happy note.
Just like George Costanza, leaving on a positive note.